And hear now these words from Matthew's Gospel, the 10th chapter, beginning in the 5th verse. These 12 disciples Jesus sent out with the following instructions: Do not go among the Gentiles or enter any town of the Samaritans. Go rather to the lost sheep of Israel. As you go, proclaim this message: The kingdom of heaven has come near. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse those who have leprosy, drive out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Do not get any gold or silver or copper to take with you in your belts. No bag for the journey or extra shirt or sandals or a staff, for the worker is worth his keep. Whatever town or village you enter, search there for some worthy person and stay at their house until you leave. As you enter the home, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it is not, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, leave that home or town and shake the dust off your feet. Truly, I tell you, it will be more bearable for Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Please pray with me. O God, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable to you. O God, our rock and our Redeemer. Amen. A few years ago, I was asked to present a Christian perspective at a Jewish Community Council's event focused on the topic of proselytizing. The Jew presented her perspective. Judaism doesn't believe non-Jews need to follow their religious practices and customs, only abide by some basic ethical principles, she said. We do not proselytize. I started to perspire a little bit. The Muslim presented his perspective. Everyone is free to worship God in whatever way he or she chooses. Muslims have no problem with that, he said. Really? I asked. This is the most Unitarian version of Islam I had ever encountered. Now I was really sweating. Looking over my 4-page manuscript, I realized that what people wanted me to say is that all religions point to the same basic truth, and my understanding of God is no better than yours, but I gave them all 4 pages of my remarks anyway. If you're going to make a mistake, my high school chorus teacher used to say, don't be tentative about it, go big. To be a Christian, I said, means to have discovered good news that changes your life. News so good that it would be selfish to try to hoard or hide it. Wilbert Schenck, a missiologist, wouldn't have been surprised at my dilemma that day. Contemporary Western culture takes pride in its multiple pluralisms, he wrote. Religious, cultural, ethnic, linguistic, and aesthetic. Clearly, however, this culture intends to keep religion sequestered in the private sphere so that public culture remains wholly secular, free of religious influence. In other words, you can practice your religion as long as it stays at home. Now, before you all decide to get up and leave, let me assure you that Schenck is quick to say that the antidote to this problem is not more Christian fundamentalism that seeks to power play the Christian faith into the public arena through those old battle lines that we're all familiar with of prayer in school or prayers before governmental meetings and God Bless America sung just before the last beer call at baseball games. Schenck wanted the West to learn from other cultures that seem better equipped to learn what he calls a Christological openness to culture, rather than religion being some add-on practice that exists outside of the way we live our lives, Schenck argues. It's got to be an expression of faith that happens at the center of it. I doubt Schenck had Alcoholics Anonymous in mind when he wrote these words, but the 12 steps does exactly that. God, or the higher power, if you prefer, is not some ornamental practice or badge that a person adds as a kind of extracurricular project, but it is the very thing that has saved and continues to save an addict's life. Attending an AA group recently, I was struck at how little talk there was of alcohol and drinking in comparison to talk about God. And not God as an idea or a doctrine, but as the only thing, hear this, the only thing that has kept this person alive. I dare say there was more first-person talk about the impact God was having on people's lives in that meeting than there is in most of our Sunday school classes on Sunday mornings. Step 11 is about improving our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. What is jarring about reading this step as part of AA is that this is supposed to be what the church is for. This is supposed to be what draws us together. This is supposed to be our reason for being, the discipline of worship, the discipline of prayer, and discernment that then gives us our vocation, that gives us assignments. And yet, when we are asked by friends or neighbors as to why we go to church, I bet some of us, maybe many of us, try our best to avoid any talk of God altogether. We talk about children's programs or religious education or the beautiful music or the social justice commitments. Next time, try telling your friend, I go to church because it's the place where I improve my conscious contact with God, the place where I discern God's plan for me. Try that out and see how it feels. The pressure to keep religion sequestered in the private sphere is so strong that it is difficult to discuss, even when we are asked about it. Of course, the real issue isn't whether or not we feel free to talk about God in public. That is the way the religious right cuts the issue. But I think the bigger issue is whether, in the midst of a culture that makes all of God talk unacceptable, whether the church is a space where we can experience the freedom that comes with God at the center of our lives, where the awkwardness of God talk is overcome by the joy, the real joy of the experience of God. That is what AA wants for its members. It's not altogether different from what the Apostle Paul wanted for us. Because God has saved you, he says in Romans, live like it through the church. Give your whole self to God as a living sacrifice. And unlike most sacrifices that seem to be at someone's expense, this kind of sacrifice results in the total transformation of the person giving herself over to God. The renewing of the mind, the gift of the body employed for what is good and perfect and true. When you have experienced that kind of saving or that kind of freedom. You want to share it. Now, in the big book, the first four steps of the 12 are covered in one chapter, and steps 5 through 11 are covered in a second chapter, and then an entire chapter is devoted to step 12, carrying this message to other alcoholics, which makes recovering addicts some of the most evangelical people that you may know, though they would never refer to themselves that way. Tim and I have tried to show all through this series how the 12 steps have wisdom to teach the church. And nowhere is that more true than when it comes to this kind of sharing. First of all, AA says the best reason to carry this message for others is that it helps the person who is bearing the message. Life will take on new meaning, the big book says, to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience that you must not miss. Helping others find the saving path that has saved you will help you. But here's where AA's form of evangelism diverges from the stuff that most of us have all rejected. AA says you can't help others by criticizing them. You can't help others by trying to persuade someone into your way of thinking. Don't refer to this book or any other resource, the big book says. Don't use spiritual jargon. Use everyday words. Don't talk about theological terms or concepts or even what church tradition you belong to. That puts the focus on something other than God. No, do none of those things. Instead, when the time is right, and you'll know it, the book says, simply and truthfully, tell him or her exactly what happened to you. That's the secret of AA, which I believe is the origin of evangelism. If God has transformed your life, then people will see that in you. Some people will want that, and they will learn it by your testimony. Perhaps if we get right down to it, the idea of sharing good news with anyone else is frightening because some of us are not sure that we have encountered God sufficiently enough to have anything to share. But really, that makes us no different from the first disciples. We do not truly comprehend any spiritual things, Richard Rohr writes in his book on spirituality and the 12 steps, until we ourselves give it away. Spiritual gifts increase only by using them. It's like love itself. You can't really understand it until you're in the middle of living it. And you can't really find yourself living it without risking that it might not be true. Jesus sends his disciples out to share good news. The kingdom of God has come near. It's early in their training. It's only the 10th chapter in the book of Matthew. They testify to that good news with their whole selves by healing people, bringing life where there is death, and sharing freely whatever they have. But the hitch is that they can take almost nothing with them. None of the usual stuff that we rely on to dress up our own humanity into something less vulnerable than it really is. Nothing to protect us from the awkwardness of intimacy with other people. Nothing to hide behind, just themselves and good news. They are supposed to be carrying the good news, but it's almost like Jesus knows they themselves can't fully experience it until everything they have relied on in the past their family or their image or their resources or their careers. That's all mercifully taken away so that it's only a person being with a person. Nothing but a human exchange. Love in its purest form is always found there. This past Friday night, Rob Tracy gave a tremendous guitar concert here on the front steps. The electricity went out, but he kept on playing. And I learned a new thing about Rob Friday night as he was introducing a John Prine song. He told us how his father used to play his own guitar and sing to him to get him to go to sleep almost every night. Almost every night, it was a John Prine song that Rob Tracy fell asleep to. So obviously, Rob Tracy got John Prine in his bones. I couldn't help but thinking out there on the steps Friday night, what if that's the way that we shared our faith? Not this programmatic stuff that involves me trying to convince you that my conception of God is better than yours. Not right-wing legislative power plays that tries to force prayer or religion into spaces where you do not want it. But a father sharing a gift that has changed him and is still changing him. Like an addict sharing his own experience of redemption with a sister at the end of her rope or a brother who is drowning. A gift that is given truly not as a ploy, not as a trick, but just as a gift. A gift that gets fuller and deeper for everybody the more that it is shared. Like a son drifting off to the dreams of his father, singing a song like, "Only love, love only love will do."